Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 122. Not the best week for news, not the worst week for scores. I'm Alex, here with me as always, because quite frankly, we just can't seem to get rid of him. Ben, what's up, Ben?
It's true.
And unfortunately not with us this week is Colin, who I'm sure will listen to this podcast and then curse at us for not mentioning the things that he probably wanted to talk about later.
He was afraid of the spiders in your garage.
Yes. For those of you who didn't listen to the pre-show, because we now have apparently a pre and a post-show and intermission sequences, I killed a bunch of spiders. Not interesting in the podcast. Let's talk about some of the bad news. I know it's not a great way to start the podcast, but the Sharks did eke out a couple of wins during the week, and we'll get to those. First and foremost, a Shark player went down. Now, obviously, we've been without Carlson for a while. We've been without Kane, and we'll talk about why that is in just a little bit. But Chamech basically out, pretty much out for the season, right, Ben?
Oh, he's totally out for the season. Yeah, I think what initially it was unclear whether the damage was to his ankle or knee, and so there was some question about from some part of the fan base as to what the injury was. But I felt, and I wasn't willing to watch that again because it was horrible, but I felt it looked like an MCL and ACL. Turns out that by the next day it had been confirmed that poor Chamech tore both the ACL and MCL, will have to have surgery and rehab. And to me, that's, you know, given the point in the season we're in, that's it. Like, that's it for Chamech.
Yeah. And that's despite early reporting that seemed to try and indicate otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird, right? Because we've obviously heard this tune before, specifically with injuries to ACLs and MCLs, that, you know, the team seemed to play sort of Baghdad Bob with these sorts of injuries at various times. I mean, for reals, right?
Yeah,
they did it with Jumbo. I think both times he injured his knee. They did it with Hurdle when he went out in the playoffs the year we made it to the Stanley Cup final. They were day to day. I think, you know, to the Sharks' credit here, or maybe they didn't really have any control over it. At least it only took a day for it to be confirmed, right? And I think what was kind of cool about sort of the way we've came to hear about it is that Chamech actually posted to social media.
Right.
Ahead
of time.
Yeah, I mean, he posted, he showed, you know, the with the knee brace and the caption in check, time to start rehab, essentially.
I'm sure the org loved that, by the way.
Well, you know what? As a fan, I do like it.
Oh, I'm not talking about from a fan perspective.
Right? and you know what? Fuck the org from my perspective, right?
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Because we've seen them, I think, over the last couple of years, just kind of yank our chains on injury side. And it's not cool. It's not fair to us. It's not fair to the player, to be honest. And honestly, all praise to Chamech for I think, you know, doing what's the right thing for him, given that he's a younger guy and he's playing for a contract, you know, in the next couple of years of playing for a new one, right? Like,
right.
Start the rehab process, get yourself better and be ready for next year, right? Don't do what the older guys have done and run the risk of greater injury or delaying the rehab so you're not ready for the beginning of the next season. Just start.
Well, that may not even have been an option for him based off of how that injury looked.
You know, I don't know, right? But the org has certainly given players who wanted to push through the injury the opportunities to do so.
Yeah, true.
And right? And whether it is the agent's call here or the player's call, or maybe it was the org's call, I don't get that sense from the way it was announced on social media. I think this is the right call.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I was actually very surprised when I first saw him tweet that picture. I was like, where's the scar? No surgery? That's weird. Especially with the reporting, then obviously it comes out, well, yeah, he hadn't had the surgery yet. I'm just so
exactly
used to, like, rushing people into the surgery, which, you know, if you know the Sharks surgeon.
record
with knee injury recovery. So yeah,
exactly. To me, the question really now is who's going to do the procedure, right?
Yeah,
is he going to get it done here, or is he going to go home to Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic and get it done?
Right.
So, you know, I think what I guess how I would approach this from here is I hope I wish for the best for Chamech in the surgery, in the rehab, etc. He played very well for the Sharks, paired with Brent Burns. He brought a different, more physical aspect to the role.
Yeah,
than other folks.
And Ben, that was actually, sorry to interrupt you, but that was actually going to be my question, because I'm sure a lot of people are wondering the exact same thing. Someone hit me up on the side and said, well, it's a good thing the Sharks have depth, right? And I said,
yes,
it is. But for a team that's kind of been playing defensive pairing roulette a little bit in terms of trying to figure out good defensive pairings, Chamek and Burns teamed up together were pretty good, at least one of the better combos we've seen with Burns so far. Yeah?
Yep. So I totally agree with you. But I guess what I would say is I don't think actually the other pairing that now we're going to see with Burns is a bad pairing.
No, of course
not. It's a different pairing.
But we finally kind of settled on a pairing that was working.
Well, but I guess what I would say is I don't think Ryan Burns wasn't working.
Yeah.
It just wasn't doing what DeBoer wanted it to do.
Right. Right.
If that makes sense, right?
I like Ryan as well.
And here's the thing, right? Like Joakim Ryan is a legit top four defender in this league, and he was being benched, you know, for Chamek, who's fine, good, you know, some folks kind of looked at the numbers, the underlying numbers, as Chamek got hurt, and the prospect of Joakim Ryan coming back in was clearly what was going to happen here. And, you know, what the numbers show is that if you're talking about shot attempts, which is, you know, something we talk about a lot on this podcast, right? That a good way to evaluate the team and where it's headed, sort of in a predictive sense, is from game to game, you know, is the team, you know, generating more shot attempts than they are allowing, right?
Right.
And if you look at Burns's partners this year, what Chamek did a very good job of was suppressing shots against.
Yeah.
Much more so than Joakim Ryan did. But what Joakim Ryan does better than Chamek does is generate shots for.
Right.
So it's really, honestly, you know, that pairing is probably just as good. It's just tilted offensively, whereas the Chamek Burns pairing is more tilted defensively, if that makes sense, which is a weird thing to say because Brent Burns doesn't tilt anything defensively. But it just, you know, that they have different strengths. And, you know, given that the Sharks need to score 6 goals a game, I'm sort of agnostic to the difference between Chamek and Ryan myself.
Yeah. You know, we don't want to lose players right before the playoffs. I mean, I think
sucks, but, and this is going to be callous, I'm going to just say up front, I'm about to be callous. If there's a player to lose to a knee injury, and his name is not Justin Braun, it's Chamek. Right, because the Sharks do have the defensive depth to make up for this. In it, you know, again, granted, differently than the strengths that Chamek brought to that pairing, but still, like, how many teams are sitting guys in the press box who are legit top six defenders, legit NHL defenders, because they think Justin Braun can still play defense in the NHL.
Well, I mean, one team has Justin Braun, so I'm going to go ahead and say one. But I get what you're laying down, and I agree. Look, I think I like Chamek. It's a bummer for Chamek.
I do too.
It is a bummer for the Sharks because, again, injury wise, you know, you don't want to have people injured.
You want
to maintain that depth.
But if there's a team that
There's like two or three players in the roster that you look at where you go, you know, if anyone has to go down, this is going to be the one that probably, I mean, I don't want to say it affects the team the least because there are actually other players that affect them the least. But
correct.
You know, there are certainly more.
Look,
concerning potential injuries.
If I'm just going to say it, like if Logan Couture went down with a knee injury, or if Tomáš Hertl went down with a knee injury, or if, you know,
hey, stop.
Brent Burns went down with a knee injury, that might be the season.
You are
right?
Absolutely jinxing everyone on this team. I expect next.
No, they will not. They will not be hurt. Instead, it will be somebody like Jumbo will lose his third knee.
Hey, what are you doing right now?
Jeez. But the point is, like, this sucks, and I empathize and sympathize for Chamek, you know, totally. I don't think anybody expected him to play nearly as well as he did, paired with Brent Burns, except for obviously PDB, who put him in his place. He's an excellent young defenseman because he's actually not that young, and you know, it sucks. But there are players on this team we cannot afford to lose, and Chamek is not one of them. Right. Callous, yes. But also true.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to be realistic when you're.
And look, hey, opponents of the Sharks, if you want to take out somebody's knee, I can give you an itemized list of sharks that it would actually help the sharks if you did so. And that list starts with Michael Haley. Hashtag yeah. Hales. Hashtag Gratensity. So let's do this.
Well, speaking of downers, Evander Kane's been out for quite a while.
Yes.
And we were very concerned that it was an injury that he had sustained in that little yep. Chara spat.
Yep.
It turns out it's not quite that, but he had a tragic loss in his family.
Yep.
Now the way the Sharks have handled this situation, it's I think, is
very
classy.
Poor. Well,
hold on. You think poor?
Yes. And here's
okay.
why.
Okay.
So, and granted, it's ultimately Evander Kane's preference, however they chose to handle it, I suspect, right?
Yeah,
and they handled it with silence up to a point.
Yeah.
But they also photoshopped him into the year's team picture in a way that was totally obvious, which led yeah. to some weird speculation and unfortunate speculation on the part of members of our community. I thought it was weird. I didn't really know why they had done it, but other parts of the community went sort of down some rabbit holes on that. I feel like that could have been headed off, that whole sort of unfortunate angle of things, if the team had simply at least, you know, indicated that this wasn't due to injury or some other
thing, but
they're, right?
You know, I'm sure they were trying to respect his wishes.
And that's why I suspect it was, you know, Kane's decision about how to handle this and what in that sense that it is what it is. And obviously, you know, he lost a young child.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
And we have the utmost sympathy for Kane and his family. And you know, however he chooses to handle it is his business. If it was a team decision to just kind of quietly sweep it under the rug, whatever. But I guess my issue here is it's really hard in a modern era, in a social media era, for a team to try to just pretend that something isn't happening, right? And maybe it is a bit unfortunate timing that the way it kind of got sussed out was, you know, when the team picture happened, people going, that's weird. That doesn't look natural. And oh shit, you know, they totally photoshopped Kane in from last year's image. I mean, again, maybe the team didn't have a choice here, but I feel like not due to any sort of, I don't think there's any blame to go around, but I just don't think you can realistically in the modern era handle things this way anymore.
Well, you know, you're talking about a you know, even a league that for the most part, for the longest time, did not want to disclose salary information when announcing a contract signing.
Right.
So it's not like the NHL is the best with transparency.
No. And they don't disclose injury information really either.
No, it was the flu reasons. Forever, and then it changed to upper or lower body.
Upper or lower body, yeah. Yeah. So, I'm heartbroken on behalf of Evander Kane. You know, obviously there was some speculation that I think went a little bit out of control as to what was going on there.
Yeah.
And that's unfair to Evander, especially given what happened here.
Through. Yeah, for sure.
And what he's going through. But it's also preventable, if you know what I mean. Like, I think that everybody in this day and age has to be a little bit more mindful of the fact that, like, there is no privacy anymore. And you have to say something. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, to counter that a little bit, not that I necessarily disagree with that element of it. You know, the one great thing about this org and it's always been about this org. And I know that a lot of people will say this about their organizations and fine, I'm sure it's fair, but, mm-hmm. Both the fans and the team have always really stood behind their players. And, mm-hmm. and this is a team specifically that has, you know, maybe to a fault sometimes worked with the players' wishes. Certainly not in this instance, I don't think, but just the fact that the team is basically like, look, you know, do your thing, take care of your thing. If you want to talk about it, fine. If you don't, fine.
Yeah.
Or have that one down. I mean,
yeah.
I think like, you know, there are plenty of teams that could rush him in. Now, granted, the Sharks don't technically need him right now. But, you know, you get the feeling that the org would handle it the same way anyway. So,
well, the team is in a hell of a bind.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
And actually, as an interesting parallel to this, the other thing that kind of came out this week is what had been going on with poor Jamie Baker, right?
Right.
So
this is going to be another topic that we're going to get to in a bit. But yes.
Yeah, but I think it's an interesting parallel in the sense that the team there also basically said, go do what you need to do, and we'll just shut up on this end. And, you know, that is what it is. And I think there was less with Mr. Baker, I think there was less sort of noise or rabble about what was going on there. Though obviously, you know, we've talked about this before. You and I were curious about exactly what was going on there, and you know, we didn't really find out. This it's been kind of a year, right, since that stuff went down, and now we're finding out because Baker was, you know, forthcoming and courageous about the challenges he'd faced. And
absolutely.
And by the way, if you know listeners, if you haven't read the Athletic article about this, written by Kitty Baker, is that her last name?
No, it was Kitty.
Is it the other?
No, yeah, it wasn't Kitty Baker.
It was the other. Yeah, this is terrible. I can't remember her name.
Look to you. You're doing such a great job.
Katie Strang.
Yeah,
it was Katie Strang, athletic writer named Katie. Anyway, the article's awesome, and it's super worth reading, not just because it's informative as to what Jamie Baker was going through, but also it's an issue that I feel like there needs to be more awareness of in society,
right?
Of dealing with courageously and openly mental health issues.
Yeah.
Because these things are important to acknowledge that they happen, they're real, and people should be able to deal with them.
And honestly, not only are they real, but they're
white
common.
Yes. So
it's one of those things where, like, you know, you get into a situation where there's something serious going on that a lot of people are kind of afflicted with and no one's talking about it. And in the end, it doesn't benefit anyone. So, you know, I certainly applaud Jamie Baker for
me too.
Having the strength and the guts to do that.
Yep.
And I hope that he realizes that all of the Sharks fan base are there for him. I'll tell you this, you know, I met him a couple of years ago at FanFest. It wasn't the first time I had met him either. Not that he remembered me. I would recognize my voice. But you know, absolute nicest dude. Like he's such a good person. He and Drew actually helped give my eldest son his middle name.
Nice.
Which is actually Drew, thanks to Drew. But you know, such a good guy, and I can tell you already, I'm just going to foreshadow something right here, or I guess spoil it. He's certainly going to be getting a star this week, because I think that was a tremendous thing. I'm serious. Do not be surprised if I don't give a star to a player this week.
And I don't want to just you know, kind of laud him for what he's done. I want to thank him.
Yeah.
On the same token, like I feel like we are better. You know, in terms of a hockey fan base, I'm also better just in terms of a culture, the more people acknowledge the struggles that everybody is going through. Yeah. And you know, not to make this about me, but, you know, my dad died in December and I've been struggling through it myself. And to see other people openly struggling with issues like this is it's first inspiring to see somebody get through it the way Jamie has. And obviously his stuff is way worse the things he's had to go through, and partly because of. And the connection is made in the article, by the way, so I don't feel like I'm extrapolating here. The connection that is made to the head injuries he suffered as part of the collisions of, you know, that are just part of the game, not fighting, right, but just the speed of the game and the hits, you know, that's something we've seen a lot over the last few years, right, is guys suffering post-career from the realities of what a physical game this is. Right. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this in the past. A lot of that seems to, you know, go with being one of those fighters in the games. But it's important for us to understand and recognize that the ordinary hits of the game cause this shit, too. And it's lasting and it's real work to get through it. And, you know, obviously, I think primarily I hope that Jamie is able to continue to push forward and make progress and heal. Because it's going to be a struggle the rest of his life, right? But also to thank him for being so open about it.
Yeah, I think it's going to wind up helping a lot of people. Ben, listen.
Yes.
I know we've got a lot to talk about, but we've also got some games going on here. So let's get right into the games, folks. The games. I'm stalling as I make sure I have the right game open for us this week.
it's St. Louis.
I know, which for those of you who are longtime Sharks fans, especially Sharks fans that jumped in the late 90s, early 2000s, I can't shake that rivalry feeling off these guys. Ben, I know you probably feel quite different. Sharks end up winning this game. Goals from Timo Meier.
Woo-hoo.
Also Timo Meier.
Yes.
Two Timo Meier goals. It's Timo time, folks. And in overtime, Kevin LeBanc. Now, couple of things about this game for me. Timo Meier, he's good, dude. Ben, I know you called this. He's good. But not only that, there were some crazy passes from Thornton as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, man.
And Coach Ure on that final goal.
Of course, yeah. But Thornton specifically, I want to call it, because you talk about a guy who, man, you know, given what he had gone through, real question whether or not he was going to be able to fully recover from that injury and kind of do his thing, right? Because so much of his game is kind of creating that open space, and that requires skating. And I'll tell you what, man, right now with some of his passes this week, he's good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, good. I think Jumbo's the dream we've been waiting for a very long time, right? You and I, me and Colin, have kind of felt like Jumbo should maybe move down the lineup a little bit.
Yeah,
over the last few years, right?
We'll make more lines of threat. Like if Joe Thornton, even today, even if he were not quite as healthy as he seems to be right now, as your third line center, come on.
Yeah, who can match up with that? Who's got a Hall of Fame center?
Well, and here's the thing:
like their third line besides the Sharks.
Look, we know this. We know this from guys like Chichu, right? And plenty of players. Jumbo lifts up the players around him. Mm-hmm. When he's on their line.
Oh, so yeah, like he's driving the bus. Yeah, yeah.
So if you're going to drop him down, you're going to have him play with younger players. Thumbs up.
Yep.
Now, those guys are only going to learn.
Yeah. And you know, interestingly, you know, in regards to that, like, I think we've seen significant development, not just in Marcus Sorensen, right? Who has been on a tear since he came back off the bench. And, you know, I think it's fair to say over the last 3 weeks or so that Kevin LeBanc looks like a different player in a lot of cases. Now, does he still make mistakes from game to game? Yeah, but that's the price you pay, you know, to have a young player who in some sense is like, from a, when we think about passing only, is kind of like Jumbo's successor on this team down the road. Right. He's going to be that quarterback of the power play when Jumbo's not here anymore, and gets kind of treated like that, you know, on the first power play unit. So, and I hope that some of that is because LeBanc has been playing with Jumbo and getting to get a sense of how he views the ice and you know, sees where players are and thinks the game and thinks where players will be, which is what really makes Jumbo so awesome, right?
Right.
I think we've felt for a while like the team needed somebody like Jumbo on the third line. But we have to recognize also that part of the reason that Jumbo can be the third line center is because other guys have stepped up.
Right.
Which is also a theme this week.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And Timo Meier's awesome.
He's so awesome.
He is.
He's going to make it so hard to afford this team down the line. Any other thoughts on this game, Ben? I don't really have a lot of thoughts on this game. I mean, the Sharks take away a win, which is obviously a huge plus. And, you know, the Sharks in general this week did pretty well. So it's just kind of a good way to go. And you got to remember at this point, you know, they were coming off of beating Montreal. They'd beat Chicago. They'd beat Colorado. So this was a win streak right here.
I think the only other things I would say about this game is that the Blues have been on fire the last month and a half or so. Right. So they're actually a very strong team that is making a strong push towards the playoffs. And so to see the Sharks, while down a couple of guys, really dominate this game, honestly, and then, you know, manage to take it home in overtime, thanks to, you know, Couture and LeBanc hooking up on just a really pretty sequence that's actually started with Tomáš Hertl circling back and then, you know, passing very nicely to LeBanc, and LeBanc passing very nicely to Couture, and then receiving a pass and just kind of burying it. And, you know, this is what I hope to see this team doing heading towards the playoffs, is outmatching their potential, you know, playoff opponents.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
The Sharks would go on to play the first of a back-to-back against the Minnesota Wilds. And folks, Sharks won this one too, this time by a score of 3-0. Goals from Barclay Goodrow, Tomáš Hertl, speaking of guys who are playing really well.
Whoop.
And Logan Couture. And I'm just going to say that the match on your Nyquist may or may not have gotten lit here with that assist on that Tomáš Hertl goal. Jones in that, and I will say this, good game from Jones.
Yeah. Hey, you know, like maybe aside from one game this week and a couple of games over the last month, you know, Jones has been playing pretty well, and kind of thank God, because the Sharks aren't going anywhere unless he figures out what the hell has been going on all year. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a nice shutout. I'm glad he got it. Minnesota's not that great, so you want the Sharks to dominate a game like this. They didn't really dominate it, you know, from a possession perspective for most of the game. You know, they did make a push at the end of the second and into the third, which coincided, by the way, with them scoring their first two goals. Right. And then you kind of, you know, as you would expect to happen after that, score effects kind of took over and the Wild pushed back. But, you know, the Sharks were able to really, you know, despite the fact that they gave up a lot of shots, really prevent those shots from being scary.
Right.
So, yeah. This was a good game for the Sharks.
Yeah, I think overall, I mean, we're going to get to the next game. Well, why don't we just hop?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's the Wild. Who gives
hop right in. Yeah. Sharks take on the Jets in the second of that back-to-back on the road. Sharks win this game 5-4. A couple things here. Dell starting in net, and the reason I wanted to move on to this is because despite the score, Dell had a pretty good game.
He had a great game.
Like, you know, a lot of these goals, kind of fluky goals. And that's the thing, you know, we talked about the goaltender struggles all season and how, you know, just it was kind of a downer considering how good the offense is this year. But, you know, both these guys are slowly starting to build their way back and look really good. Now, in this game, goals from Vlasic to open up. Then the Jets would score two from Kopp and Little. And then, remember I said that match lit under Nyquist? Well, here's number one, folks. That's right, number one. It's 2-2 at the end of the first. Kyle Connor would score for Winnipeg in the second. That would make it 3-2. And then Nyquist says, "I don't think so, my friends," with an assist from Vlasic. And then in the third period, Sorensen in this game feels pretty good. And then the Jets score. But with like sub five seconds left, Joe Pavelski with a beauty, and the Sharks take this one by a score of 5-4. Now, we already mentioned Dell. It's pretty obvious that Nyquist had a good game, and this is encouraging too, because I think despite the fact that Nyquist has not necessarily been scoring for us as he's adjusted to the system, what he has done is create a lot of danger opportunities.
Yep.
And this is a game where you could see it really start to pay off, which is great. Also, the thing I love about Nyquist's game is not only is his shot ridiculously fast, but he likes playing right in front of the net. And I think, you know, Ben, I love players that do that. I mean, I don't like when they get injured, but I like it when they do it.
All right. Yeah, that's fine. So I guess my takeaways from this game are, first, you know, you credit Pavelski with burying that goal at the end, but let's not forget the saucer pass.
Oh, right.
From Meyer, you know, both of those plays, first the saucer pass and then Pavelski being able to get lift on that pass to put it bar down. I mean, that whole sequence was amazing.
Right.
But it doesn't happen without Meyer driving the zone with possession and flipping that pass over. I want just to say a couple more things about Dell. You know, I looked at the, you know, the goals he gave up, and you don't really want your goalie to give up four, but three of those were either tipped or screened.
Yeah.
They're just goals that anybody's going to give up. Yes. Right. The fourth is, or one of the four is, you kind of hope your goalie would stop, but it's not like, you know, the other guy who plays goalie for Teal isn't giving up bad goals, foreshadowing for our next game.
Right.
So it is what it is. Right. You know, I guess overall what I would say is the Winnipeg Jets are one of those teams last year that looked like they were Stanley Cup capable. They seem to have taken a bit of a step back this year relative to the Sharks, and the Sharks, you know, shockingly on the second game of a back-to-back dominated this game.
Yeah.
I felt from a possession perspective, if not on the scoreboard. And part of that, you know, was that the Sharks did a thing they haven't done a lot this year, which is they really limited, you know, shot attempts from right in on top of the goalie.
Right.
And on the other end, they got a shit ton of action on Hellebuck, and Hellebuck was pretty leaky. So, you know, kudos to whatever the Sharks have been kind of doing lately that has limited those dangerous shots more than had happened earlier this year. I don't know if it's a combination of personnel or finally everybody woke up and were like, oh, you know what? We're like 20 games to the playoffs now. Maybe we should start like listening to the coaches and caring and you know, giving it 100% or whatever. But hey, keep doing that, guys.
Man, you're so opinionated.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, one more game this week, guys. Sharks take on the Florida Panthers. I know you keep asking yourself, they're a team still, huh? They are. They are. And not only are they a team, you probably also wonder who's playing goal for them. Because you're like, they're a team, right? You know, it's fascinating to me when you look at the two fan bases between the Panthers and Tampa Bay. I have been to a Lightning game in Tampa Bay. I've been to a Panthers game in Florida. I will tell you this, the Florida Panthers fans that I met, probably some of the nicest fans in the world. They were happy that I was there. They were happy that I was wearing a Sharks jersey. Very opposite from my experience living in Boston and seeing the Sharks visit town. Lightning fans also really good fans. But this is a team that I just kind of like when I think of the Panthers, I think of like the Beezer, like back in the day, right? Right?
Sure.
Right? Right? He played for them, right?
Do what now?
the Sharks, having won a bunch of games, decide, let's not win this one. And they lose by a score of 42. Goals from Melko Karlsson and Kevin LeBanc. Again, Kevin LeBanc, great game. Now, one of my favorite things about this game, Ben, had nothing to do with the game itself. Had to do with how awesome Sharks fans are. They created a giant Mike Hoffman, basically memorial banner for the few hours that we had him on the team. It was massive. It was displayed on the Sharks telecast a ton of times. I don't know if you can see it where you were, Ben. Hilarious. Good job, fans. High fives all around.
I had seen it on Twitter prior to the broadcast, so I wasn't really paying attention or looking for it during the broadcast. It is hilarious to raise somebody's number to the quote unquote rafters when he was a Shark for all of 3 hours. I think was even better about this was that Mike Hoffman was a hugely good, what's the word I'm looking for here? He had a good sense of humor about it and asked to have the banner.
How could you not, Ben?
And the I think it was the Teal City crew specifically that orchestrated this whole thing, and they handed the banner over the next day to him. So I guess I would say well done to everybody concerned here.
Yeah,
that it was, you know, because you could imagine the wrong player sort of taking that personally.
I don't think you realistically could. Come on, it's not like
you sure about that.
I mean, you'd have to really be an asshole. is what I'm trying to say, Ben.
Okay.
I love this fan base. I'm so happy to be a part of it. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Ben, I don't really have much to say about this game beyond that. Sharks did dominate possession across this game, which was a little bit annoying to watch.
I think what was interesting to watch from my perspective as somebody who both watches the game and sits on the sort of Sharks fan Twitter at the same time is, you know, you can see some players pretty disappointed by this result, to which I'm like, what, do you expect the Sharks to not drop another game between now and, you know, wherever they get to in the playoffs? I mean,
no, Ben, that's the answer. No,
no, exactly.
We don't want them to.
Well, no, you never want a team to lose a game, but realistically speaking, the Sharks had won 6 straight, right? So they're going to drop a game. And yes, they're going to even lose to shock horror bad teams. And by the way, Florida is a bad team. So whatever, it happens. On the same side where the Sharks lost a game that they sort of dominated from a possession perspective, they have won a number of games this year they had no business winning just because, hey guys, hockey has a lot of luck in it.
What are you talking? You shut your mouth.
Right. Okay. And also, Jones let in a really shit goal.
Yeah, so. I agree as well. Can I ask you a quick question? Doug on our, Doug, one of our live listeners. Hi, Doug. Asked us a question. Sup, fellas? First question for you. And then he only asked one question, which I thought was great. Don't know if I'm alone in this, but it seems like Donskoy's play has slipped a little again. Do you think he'll move to the fourth line when Kane is back? This actually brings up an interesting question because, when guys like Kane and Karlsson come back, where do you think they're going and how do you think that affects things? Especially since they're both likely, it sounds like Kane may be back for the Nashville game.
No, I think he said today he will play in the next Sharks game.
Gotcha. Yeah, I must have missed that announcement. But I don't know, Ben, your thoughts? I mean, I like Donskoy's game. I think you have to have reasonable expectations for Donskoy, personally. Yeah. I think Donskoy's a guy who is a very smart player, a very skilled player, and he comes up big when he needs to come up big. Is he gonna be massively consistent? I don't think we've seen Donskoy being that.
Right.
But you know, I don't really see Donskoy as a problem personally. What about you?
No, I certainly don't either. And I think this actually plays into a question we got from another viewer this week. East Coast Sharks fan asked, you know, more in relation to Michael Haley, what happens when everybody's healthy on the forward side? I think with the idea that Haley will sit, and I'm not sure that Haley will sit, and it relates to how the organization views Donskoy's play, which is why I think that Doug Anderson's question is a good one. I do feel like, and it filters out through state media, that the team feels that Donskoy has challenges in the same way that we've heard through state media that the org's perspective is that LeBanc has challenges that neither of them is apparently working hard enough on. So I don't know what's going to happen when Kane comes back, but I think the two most likely guys to sit that aren't named Haley are LeBanc and Donskoy. And I would not be shocked if Donskoy not only falls to the fourth line, but actually falls to the press box on behalf, you know, in favor of Haley, because PDB is a fucking idiot.
Well, you're just a beacon of great news, aren't you?
But on the same token, right? Like, I also wouldn't be totally shocked if Haley does sit, because we did certainly see 3 years ago when the Sharks got to the playoffs, for whatever reason, you know, Haley suddenly wasn't playing anymore, which was the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's also the right decision now not to be playing Haley. And yet,
that's the thing. You know, I remember last week when Haley had a good game or two, there were a lot of people who were kind of coming back and going, see? And it's like, yeah, look, no one's saying the guy can't have a good game. No one's saying the guy can't make a good play.
Yeah. Yeah.
The reality is he's eating ice time from other players who are better. That ice time.
Yeah.
Like even now when you look at the Sharks, I think, and you look at the depth and you go, right, well, but yeah, you know, they still have depth. Yeah, but that's not the point. Like, that argument to me is completely missing the point.
Yeah.
Like, completely missing the point. But hey.
Here we are.
To each their own. Ben, I got a question for you.
So ideally.
Oh, go ahead.
I think you and I both agree that when Kane is healthy, there is no Haley in the lineup, and maybe Donskoy does follow the fourth line. And that's not a bad thing. Because, you know, Donskoy, I think the problem for the organization is that Donskoy doesn't score. Yes, his underlying possession metrics are great, and he drives play in that sense, right? But my feeling is that, you know, you've got him on a line with Tomas Hertl and Timo Meier, and Hertl and Meier light up the scoreboard. And the org goes, well, why isn't Donskoy doing that too? Right? And what they're not seeing is that Donskoy is passing to a defenseman who passes to Hertl or Meier, who then passes to the guy who scores. And so, yeah, Donskoy doesn't show up on the scoreboard because he was the fourth guy in that chain.
Yeah, right.
But he's the one who gained the zone with possession.
Yeah, setting
he's the guy
up.
Who drove in deep into the zone with it.
Right.
And also, he does occasionally cough up the puck like every creative play-driving guy does, like Jumbo does. 5 or 6 times a game, like LeBanc does. Jumbo gets away with it because he's 9,000 years old. DeBoer doesn't feel the same way about LeBanc or Donskoy, so they get benched, as Donskoy did for the third period a couple games ago, or shot down two lines, as LeBanc tends to, and it's stupid, but it's what happens when Peter DeBoer is your coach. So,
Ben, how do you really feel about DeBoer? Let's change moods here for a second, Ben. 3 stars of the week for you. Or would you prefer I go first so you can think about it?
No, it's fine. I'm just going to probably steal yours like I always do. So I'm going to give Jamie Baker the 3rd star of the week because, you know, again, thank you, Jamie, for your honesty, your bravery in talking about what went down last year. I think I will give my 2nd star of the week to Tomas Hertl, just because, my God, that guy is everything we thought he would be at center over the last 4 or 5 years. And now that he's paired with Timo Meier, he's actually scoring goals, which is, hey, huge shock. You pair one great player with another great player and look what can happen.
Good things.
Right? And my first star, I think I'm going to give to Timo because he's also amazing. And that pass to Pavelski was awesome, but the two goals he scored early in the week to push the Sharks towards that first win of the week is worth acknowledging as well.
Yeah. So. I am going to not actually have the same three stars that you have. I'm going to give my third star to Hurdle. I gotta be honest with you. I'm gonna give a tying star for my third star. I know you hate that, but I really want my first two stars to go to the non-players. My third star is Hurdle, who I continue to love and continues to be one of the best players on the team, if not the best player on the team.
Yep.
And I gotta give it to Nyquist too for finally opening up and scoring and getting two in a game as well, which I think is awesome. My second star is going to go to, again, kind of the Oregon the Sharks fan base, just for the way they kind of they've really reached out to Kane and the fan support for this franchise is amazing, be it Kane or Jamie Baker or really anyone who's ever kind of come into the franchise. And I think it's really awesome to watch. I mean, I know you'd like to think every franchise is like that. I can tell you right now from living in other areas, they're not necessarily like that. And my first star is going to go to Jamie Baker because, to your point, Ben, it's just such an incredibly courageous thing for him to have done. And I think it's so important for people to hear stuff like that. And I'm sure, like, the minute it happened, he was probably getting way more texts and emails than he liked, and not necessarily, well-meaning, but probably not actually helpful given the situation.
Yeah.
And that's a really tough thing to have to deal with. So a big, big, big thanks to Jamie Baker for having the guts and just the in general, despite him dealing with depression and other things, he comes off as a very positive guy. So to have the positivity to kind of bring it up and realize that this could help other people, I think is absolutely great.
Yep.
Ben.
Yes.
As of this podcast, he says slowly, because the Sharks or the NHL keeps having all of these weird divisions of their standings. The Sharks are currently sitting in second place in the Pacific. They are just behind Calgary with 1 point. This will be a fun race, people. And then down a ways in third is Vegas, who, by the way, they've heated up as of late. Overall in the NHL, if you're someone who cares about that, well, first of all, if you care about the conference, Sharks are sitting in second. And if you care about the overall NHL, Sharks are sitting up in third. Look, no one's catching up to Tampa Bay. They've already clinched.
Yeah.
So there you go. But the Sharks are obviously doing really well. They're starting to heat up in some respects going into the playoffs, and that is extremely exciting. Now,
and playing very well without two incredibly key players.
Exactly. Key players are the key. So
that's good. That's good content.
It's real good insight. I'm doing my best John Madden impression. How's it working out? You what were you going to say? Not well? Thanks,
Ben. You're doing fine.
Thanks, Ben. Look,
I'm sorry. I'm no Pat Summerall.
Oh man. No offense to Pat Summerall. I think that's good for everyone. The Sharks this week take on the Nashville Predators at home on Saturday. And then on Monday, they take on the Vegas Golden Knights at home. And then, whew, not to be outdone with back-to-backs, they got another back-to-back. Thursday, they take on the Kings on the road. And Friday, they take on the Ducks also on the road. Now, I know what you're saying. All right, they're like right next to each other, right? Shut up. It's a back-to-back. They shouldn't exist in hockey as far as
yeah, but it's also two of the worst teams in the league now. This would be a lot worse just even last year.
I don't like guys playing in those conditions
because
they're tired. I don't want anyone getting injured.
No, it's look, back-to-backs are the worst, but if you've got to play back-to-backs against LA and Anaheim better this year than last year, or
back
2 years ago, or 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, when those teams were actually good,
right?
Because they're not good,
right?
They're bad. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was mistaking what you're trying to say for anything. You can check us out on the web at circlingthecup.com. You can tweet at us at circlingthecup. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/circlingthecup. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Android, people. I'm never going to learn how to do it, but you can, and I think you know because you're pretty savvy. Ben, listen, it's been a week of ups and downs. Ups in the wins categories, downs in a couple of the side categories. But overall, I think it's been another great week for the Sharks in this franchise. Yeah. I'm sorry Colin couldn't be here, and to Ian, Doug, and everyone else who was listening live. Thank you. We do appreciate you guys listening again. You can write us. We will almost always respond. And Tilted the Glasses chimed. Well, look at that. Look at that. What's up, Tilted the Glasses? This community, man. It's awesome. We all listen to each other. Great. That concludes the podcast. Ben, say bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.